In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Welcome to the I Spy Radio Show, where every week you get a little more intelligence on big government. The ammunition you need to destroy your liberal friends' fake news with real knowledge. On today's show, tax reform. Now, before you think, oh, that's a yawner, taxes are not just about math and economics. Because when it gets right down to it, taxes are all about the battle for the heart and soul of America. Generally speaking, Republicans want you to keep more of what you earn. Democrats want to tax as much as possible, and then some, so the government can spend it. And when it comes to taxes, you and Congress need to ask one simple question. Do you want people to be wealthy or government? And we are at an historic opportunity. Republicans have the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, and the presidency. And Republicans are timid about using this chance to do something bold. While Trump is charging up the hill, too many Republicans are hiding and trembling in the trenches. Never has so much opportunity been so at risk of being squandered. It's time to be bold, to take the high ground. Why? Because if people keep more of their own money, they won't want Democrats to take it away. And that's what taxes are. They are a theft of your money, but also of your time, your future. Because taxes take from your profits, off time you spent to make that extra money. Money you could spend on things to make your life more comfortable, or that you could be investing to make your future brighter. Lower taxes also force the government to rein in spending. Even Democrats occasionally get scared of massive deficit spending. Think of the message this could send to taxpayers when they pay 5 or 10 or 20% less in taxes. Think of the message this sends to people when their company keeps millions of dollars rather than paying that in taxes. They can hire more people, buy more equipment, lower prices of their products to be more competitive so they can sell more, and afford to give you a raise. Be bold, Republicans, or go home. And we find someone who won't just sit there cowering in the trenches, but will leap out and go boldly charging up that hill. I'd like to welcome Jonathan Williams. He is the Vice President of the Center for State Fiscal Reform at the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. He is also co-author of Rich States, Poor States, an annual report by ALEC of competition among the states and a ranking of their economic outlook. Jonathan, it's always good to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me back, my friend. And as I always like to say, greetings from the land of make-believe. And it once again is this week. It's a crazy place this week.
I can only imagine what it's like back there this week with all this tax stuff going on. Before we get into the details of this plan, let's talk about some basic sort of overall takes on this. Who helped build out the details of this plan?
So right now, the U.S. House is taking this up first, as all tax bills must originate in the U.S. House, according to our Constitution. So Chairman Kevin Brady of Texas, a alumni of ALEC, he used to be a state legislator. His team is spearheading this in the House Ways and Means Committee this week. It'll move to the floor of the House. And then, of course, the Senate is also expected to release a draft anytime. And so we're going to have two parallel vehicles on tax reform that will be moving forward simultaneously through the amendment process. And that will be Chairman Orrin Hatch from Utah is leading the Senate Finance Committee in those efforts. And so it's going to be a long few weeks ahead on tax reform. But I think there's a reasonably good chance that Republicans have learned from their mistakes on the failure to repeal Obamacare earlier this year and multiple attempts. And I think they're agreed that something needs to happen before the end of the year for hardworking taxpayers. So that's the good news.
Well, I would like to think that they've learned from their mistakes. I'm not sure that they have, but we'll see. In terms of the Trump administration, how much of a role did they play in this? Because from what you're describing, it sounds mainly what we're seeing so far is just the House version of this.
that's right. That's what we saw the details emerge about a week ago, and that we're going to continue to see that process move in the committee on the House side. But you know, the White House has been very supportive of this effort, and that's been a very important part. I think they've outlined some very key principles that they are looking to get out of a final package. There is, you know, the president's red lines that he's talked about of getting the business rate down to 20% on corporations, for instance, is one of those. Ensuring that middle-class taxpayers see a tax cut is another one of those. And so they've got some important principles that they continue to push Capitol Hill with right now. And obviously, this is a give-and-take process. It's not just a legislative initiative. This is going to be an executive branch initiative as well. And it's going to be interesting to see how it all comes together.
It will be. And was Alec involved at all behind the scenes on any of this? Did you guys advise and whatnot weigh in on?
Well, we were pretty out front in terms of our activity, and we have been, of course, for years talking about the necessity for federal tax reform and, of course, what the lessons that we've learned from the 50 laboratories of democracy that we follow every year in our Rich States, Poor States book. And so we've been engaged in a research and analysis perspective, working with both committee members on House and Senate side, working with the administration to provide our research when it comes to what works for tax reform at the state level. I think there's a lot of important lessons that can be gleaned yes. from those successful efforts and some non-successful efforts at the state level.
Yes, in fact, I heard you earlier this week on a Heritage panel, and you guys were mentioning how Kansas is not a good example of what to do because they did cut taxes, but they then did not cut expenses.
Well, this is the left's favorite boogeyman of tax reform these days is Kansas. From day one, Paul Krugman had it out to demonize the Kansas tax experiment. And really the short story of Kansas, and this could be an hour-long episode, as you know, Mark,
yes.
is the idea that they needed to balance their pro-growth tax cuts, which were no doubt pro-growth and did have pro-growth effects, with spending restraint as well as pay-fors. And, of course, what happened in the political process is what started out to be a very good tax package got watered down. The pay-fors got removed. The politically painful things, if you will, got removed. And what you ended up was an unbalanced tax plan that did drive up budget difficulties. And it's not rocket surgery, as I always say. This is what Art Laffer's famous line is, and it is you have to balance spending and taxes. It's yeah. Econ 101, especially at the state level.
Yeah, well, it's certainly what you would see in a family's income is that if you lose some of your income because you're, in this case, cutting back taxes, you're going to have to cut back expenses. You can't keep spending at that same rate. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, we'll have some more with Jonathan Williams, the good, the bad, and whether there's any ugly in this tax plan. Stay with us. This segment of iSpy is sponsored by Landmark Pacific. Tax reform is in the news, and we are talking with Jonathan Williams. He is the Vice President of the Center for State Fiscal Reform at the American Legislative Exchange Council. You can find them at alec.org. And every year they publish Rich States, Poor States, which is an annual report that judges competition and also ranking of state economic outlooks. You can just jump right to that by heading to richstatespoorstates.org. So let's talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of this plan, if there is any. Before we get there, though, why don't you give us some numbers on how this will impact the average person? How much will taxes go down for the average family?
Well, you know, that's a great question. There's a lot of benefits from different aspects of this plan, specifically on the corporate side for what it will do to the income and the wages of every man, woman, and child in America. And I think that's one of the most under-discussed aspects is regardless of what happens with other details of the plan, just getting the business tax rate down to 20% from the current 35% at the federal level, according to the Council on Economic Advisors, Kevin Hassett here, a PhD economist who ran the study, and he said it would be $4,000 for every man, woman, and child, just because of that corporate rate reduction. So $4,000 for each person in annual wages will go up due to the economic impact of corporate tax rate reduction. So that's
wow.
one thing to just throw out there as just like the big picture figure, regardless of all these other moving parts that may or may not occur. I think the president's red line on getting the rate to 20% for corporate, that is going to be a done deal. If this train leaves the station, it will include a 20% rate on corporate. So big benefit there. But overall, Looking to the average family, earning roughly in the $50,000 a year range, that's the median family income now in the United States, they would save about $1,100 a year because of all, and when you put in all the pluses and minuses of this plan, and keep in mind this is certainly a work in action and in progress, that would be the average under this currently introduced HB1 from the House Ways and Means Committee.
In terms of savings, of course, that's not really savings. It means that people get to keep more of what they actually earn rather than giving it to the government. $1,100 is nothing to sneeze at, but it's that $4,000 of additional wages. That's the really exciting thing, I think. I really wish, though, that they had been able to drop that from 20% down to that 15%. I really think we would have seen a massive economic turnaround at that point, because then we're like Ireland rates, and everybody wants to do business in the U.S. And I just wish they would have gotten it there. Is there any chance that eventually we would get there? And then also, why didn't they go there?
Well, right. I think that is a huge economic benefit to get below 20. And the good news is on the corporate side, it doesn't cost nearly as much to get the rate down a few more percentage points versus what it would cost on the individual side. And some suggest that based on how high the corporate rate is today, being the highest in the developed world at 35%, plus you're added on state rates on top of that, so the average is about 40. You may see a Laffer curve effect in which when you reduce that rate down to, let's say, 15 in your example, you may not lose any federal revenue because of the increased economic activity. I mean, it's fairly rare that all tax cuts pay for themselves in this case, but the corporate rate being so out of line with where the rest of the world has it, they've been dropping their rates. Ours has continued to fall behind by standing still, really, in the United States. That could be a real Laffer curve effect where we don't see really any net revenue loss because of that huge economic boom that we would see by getting to 15%, let's say.
Well, in terms of the good, the bad, and the ugly, let's start with the good. What do you like about this plan?
Well, the corporate side is certainly the best from a pro-growth perspective. Now, obviously, we want to see tax relief for all hardworking Americans, individuals, businesses, big business, small business alike. But it really does stand out that, I think the plan deserves an A grade when it comes to its corporate side of the treatment by getting the rate down to 20, if not lower, depending on what happens in the committee process, by the 5-year expensing of new equipment and the cost of that equipment instead of having to depreciate over a long lifetime. That is a pro-growth move, although I'd like to see that permanent versus just a 5-year temporary provision. But the corporate side is generally pretty good. Obviously, rates could always be lower, but this is a hugely pro-growth element of the tax reform, as I mentioned, $4,000 for every man, woman, and child in wage growth because of the corporate side. The individual side, a little bit less optimistic, and I think one of the reasons why is they didn't go far enough in many economists' view by clearing the playing field of the special interest deductions and exemptions and credits that litter the code and have turned it into Swiss cheese over the last several decades. And that has meant that rates did not come down as much as we'd like to see them probably on the individual side, as well as you saw recently in Drudge Report and the Wall Street Journal has talked about this bubble rate, the phantom rate for higher income earners, that their effective rate for a portion of income at the higher ranges would actually go up into the 40s based on every dollar earned in that range. So there are some things that are worrisome. I think that the Ways and Means Committee will be addressing those items, and the Senate Finance Committee, when they take this up, will be also hopefully smoothing out. Another big win, though, is the death tax repeal. That's something that's been a huge movement across the 50 states.
Yes.
Many states repealed their state death taxes because they see what that does to family businesses, to ranchers, to farmers, and breaking up businesses. And it's an unfair double or triple tax. I mean, that's why it's always one of the least popular when polled of all forms of taxes. Death tax is always there, even though a small subset of Americans will actually directly ever pay that tax. So there are some really good elements to this plan, and let's hope through the committee and the floor process that they'll be able to get this cleaned up in a more pro-growth direction on the individual side.
Well, in terms of the ugly, is there anything that you really do not like about this plan?
Well, you know, anytime you see people's rates go up, even if it's a kind of a short bubble, if you will, so the actual rate on paper, the statutory rate's not going to change. It's just that higher income Americans are going to be disallowed from using some of the lower rates on the marginal scale as their income goes up. So effectively, their rate goes up through a certain income level. You don't want to see that anywhere. I think that they'd be much better off getting rid of some additional deductions, such as the SALT deduction, by getting rid of more of that. They could certainly get rid of the idea that anyone would be paying a higher effective rate at any income scale. The other thing that the Wall Street Journal's pointed out, which I agree with, is we need to be cutting taxes across the board. This was Ronald Reagan's approach. This was Jack Kemp's approach. This is the free market conservative approach to cutting taxes. We shouldn't be picking winners and losers. We shouldn't fall prey to the left's demonization of the top bracket earners. I mean, these are hardworking Americans who are very productive and efficient at what they do. They're rewarded handsomely for that. But we shouldn't be saying their rate stays constant or goes up as part of tax reform. All taxpayers, regardless of their income level, deserve a tax cut, in my view.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to take a break there. Coming up, we'll be talking about something that Reagan failed to do and with his tax reform that Trump hopes to fix. Stay with us. Landmark Pacific is known for their outstanding steel buildings and general contracting. But did you know that they're also a fantastic choice to maintain your existing building? When new construction isn't an option, maintaining your existing pre-engineered steel building is absolutely imperative. Incorrect materials can greatly reduce the life of your metal roof. For metal re-roofs, repairs, or additions and remodels, call the experts at Landmark Pacific, 503-743-3256. That's 503-743-3256. And welcome back. We're talking tax reform today with Jonathan Williams. He's the Vice President of the Center for State Fiscal Reform at the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. That's A-L-E-C. You can find them at alec.org, actually. And the report, richstatespoorstates.org as well. Really interesting reading on that one. Jonathan, so one of the big things in trying to get this tax reform done was this debate over SALT, state and local taxes. Why don't you give us kind of an overview of what that is and why that met with so much resistance?
Well, you know, SALT is, when you bring up the acronym, usually you get the interest of nutritionists and folks that were thinking of Ronald Reagan's arms treaties back in the day. They don't think of the state and local tax deduction, but that is turning out to be one of the more pivotal pieces of the tax reform debate in Washington. It's been one that we have spent a considerable amount of time thinking about here at ALEC. Our members have, in fact, put together a letter to Congress saying we think it's important to repeal the SALT deduction in exchange for tax reform and lowering rates for everybody across the board. But basically, what it is in short, I my view of it is it's a subsidy to high tax states, because what it does is it allows taxpayers to deduct either the income tax or the sales tax in the state and the property taxes that they've paid to state and local governments. And so what that does is, you know, really reduces the effective cost to the taxpayer of the state level taxes in a way. But what that also does is it costs us a ton in federal tax code. It's something like $1.3 trillion over a 10-year CBO score here in Washington of what that state and local tax deduction costs taxpayers. One estimate, for instance, is that California, with the nation's highest personal income tax, I know Oregon's not far behind, but California, 13.3%. When you use the state and local tax deduction, that reduces the effective tax to 8% in California. And who pays the difference between 8 and 13.3? The taxpayers from the other 49 states. So it's a subsidy to states that can't get their taxing and spending under control. And that's one of the real reasons why I think it puts a lot of perverse incentives on state and local governments as well to overtax and overspend, because they're making the argument that, well, yeah, but you can write this off on your federal return. We can pawn off the tax burden to taxpayers from other states. That's why our members are very interested in seeing this go away as part of tax reform. Now, obviously, this is not going to be a tax increase. This is going to be part of a big tax cut. And that's why we think it's the right time to look at it. This was, by the way, Ronald Reagan's unfinished business from 1986. The last time that we wrote the federal tax code, this was an idea. He calls it the most sacred of sacred cows in the tax code because the realtors and other groups banded together to save it and beat him back in 1986. They preserved the deduction, and that's why we're fighting this battle here in 2017.
Yes, exactly. And so, of course, people – you know, we're all fiscal conservatives until it comes to a tax cut that somehow favors us. And I think that's what we saw exactly with this when you had these so-called conservatives from New York and other places. When this was announced, they said, wait a minute, we're not sure if we can support this because, of course, it hurt them. So how did you manage to get – how did they manage to get some of those Republicans on board?
Well, the short answer is they haven't for some. There's going to be some that are going to vote against this regardless. But what Chairman Kevin Brady and House Ways and Means did was he altered the complete elimination of the SALT deduction and has now retained it partially, at least, for property taxes. So under the chairman's proposal being heard in Congress, individuals will no longer be allowed to deduct their sales tax or their income tax, but they will be able to deduct the first $10,000 up to $10,000 cap in property taxes. So while this is a good move in the right direction of getting rid of part of the SALT deduction, I think that last piece of it is still about $400 billion over 10 years, which could be used to dramatically reduce individual rates further, or that idea of getting the corporate rate down to 15%. This is something that still could be on the table if we look at broadening that tax base, getting rid of this distortion to high tax states.
Mm. And you're right, is that Reagan had called SALT the subsidizing the high tax policies of a handful of states. And that's one of the things, when I first saw that they were looking at doing this, I got very excited because I thought if you know, nothing else, what it really does is it forces the argument back on a local level. Because right now, a lot of these high tax states are able to continue to tax at these high rates. Because you're able to write that off on your federal tax forms. Well, now suddenly you can't do that, and that means your individual tax bills may in fact go up a little bit, which then means you are going to be holding your own state representatives more accountable. I think this was a brilliant idea.
Well, and it's great for those of us who believe in federalism because we want ideas to be generated and we want solutions to be found at the state level and at the local level of government. And we want these discussions, these fundamental discussions over taxing and spending to happen at the most local level possible in many cases. This really does help along those lines. And, you know, back in 1986, the Congressional Budget Office did a study that estimated state and local governments spend 20% more than they would otherwise if SALT had been eliminated. And so this is a clear disincentive for getting spending under control. One other example is, as we're talking, Alaska's in special session. They're looking to solve their budget issues. And one of the things their liberal Republican governor wants to do is bring back the income tax that was abolished nearly 40 years ago. And one of the ideas and one of his selling points is, well, you can write it off your federal return. So if that isn't a more clear example of how this incentivizes big government, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, really. So if we remove SALT, how much of a dent is that going to put in what people from these high-tax states would see from their tax cut? I mean, is it rather significant?
Well, it depends on the individual taxpayers and which brackets they're in. But in many cases, people don't take advantage of SALT as much as they probably think they do because current rules under the code today, such as the hated alternative minimum tax, the AMT, and other limitations on what people can take as itemized deductions start to, you know, phase in. Those limitations phase in as income levels go up. And so while people think they may be losing it on the entire bit of their income, they're actually not losing as much as they would think. Now, the good news is Chairman Brady's proposal does eliminate fully the hated alternative minimum tax as well as some of the other limitations on itemized giving. And so people will be able to deduct, let's say, more that they give to charity if they still decide to itemize their deductions. So it's not as bad as some people, I think, are probably going to fear. And plus, when you reduce individual rates, and if we can use this last $400 billion that's sitting out there for the property tax part of SALT to reduce individual rates across the board for all taxpayers, this will help hold everyone harmless.
Well, and plus, remember, the goal of this is to get everybody higher wages. And if a lot of that money comes back from overseas and the corporate tax rate drops as well, we'll certainly see that. Everybody stay with us. We'll continue our discussion of tax reform with Jonathan Williams. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Jonathan Williams of ALEC. That's the American Legislative Exchange Council. You can find them at alec.org. And so we've been talking tax reform here. And in terms of this rolling out, of course, the president and the Republicans need a lot of public support. And you and I have exchanged a couple of emails about this, and I just see them once again kind of bungling their messaging on this. And I actually saw Steve Forbes, I think he was on a Fox Business show, and could not believe that the Republicans were having any difficulties at all. He said, look, this is a tax cut. This ought to be the easiest sell in the world. What is it that the Republicans are finding hard to sell about this?
Well, yeah, that's the old line of the journalist Bob Novak. His line was that God put Republicans on Earth to cut taxes, and if they can't figure this out and get their act together on it, boy, this is going to be a rough next year or so. Yes. With these majorities that may not be around after 2018. So, I mean, that's the idea. Is I think for a lot of them on the political side, they know they have to get something done after Obamacare and that failed rollout. So, I mean, the devil's always in the detail on tax reform. Is we want to make sure that we make a tax code that produces economic growth and benefits everyone across the board. But the minute you start taking on some of these sacred cows that we were talking about, yes, like the SALT deduction or other popular provisions that people have taken advantage of that might benefit people individually but aren't a benefit to society at large or to our economy at large, that's where you start running into the problems. Is we know what the economics says about this. We know that under the proposal, for instance, the estimate is 975,000 new jobs for the economy, 4.4% increase in income. That is a tremendous kind of benefit, but people are going to fight tooth and nail to keep their special provisions. The concentrated benefits of those tax provisions that have been fought and bled for in some cases over decades now, these are things that are not going to go away easily, and they have very powerful interest groups. I mean, when the president talked about draining the swamp, it's hard to think about a scenario that's more swampish than the tax code. Yeah. As we were standing out front of the IRS building just several weeks ago, talking about the need for tax reform, I looked back at the building and was like, boy, this is the swamp. This is exactly what the president was talking about. And so these swamp creatures in the tax code don't die easily, and it's going to be a tough slog for the next few weeks, I think, to probably get this over the top.
I do think it will be very tough. And of course, we're not getting any help at all from the mainstream media. But you're right. I mean, the whole tax code, it's like, an Oprah show. Loopholes for you, loopholes for you, loopholes for everybody. And I think everybody has those, as you put it, sacred cows that they just want to cling to. And it's going to be very difficult to start taking those, actually weaning people off of those.
Well, it's like the old saying. I think it was Huey Long, a famous or infamous politician, of course, of Louisiana, is that his philosophy of tax policy was don't tax you, don't tax thee, tax that fellow behind the tree. And, it gets really just tough. I mean, people say they're all for tax reform, but then when you go after whatever provision that is, they just come unglued and they'll make a big stink about it and threaten to blow up the entire package until they get their special deal.
In terms of this package, are they removing a lot of the loopholes? Because part of the goal going into this was to make it a lot simpler. And they are saying that some people will be able to fill this out on a postcard. So are they really actively going after some of those loopholes and just having a flatter, fairer tax?
Well, it is going to make it much easier for the people that will, let's say, file under the standard deduction instead of itemizing. And perhaps there's some virtue in that in terms of its simplicity. I think there probably is. There's arguments over whether you want to do it through standard deduction or some other way. But under the current tax system, about one-third of Americans, just under about 30%, itemize instead of take the standard deduction. Under this proposal, I've seen estimates of around 5% or maybe just a little north of that are estimated that they're going to itemize. And so this is going to be a big transformation in having many more people take the standard deduction and therefore being able to use a much easier type of filing. The only issue is do you need to then calculate it both ways to figure out what's better for you, whether you need to take the itemization approach or the standard deduction. It may change by year for people if they, let's say, have a bigger gift to charity in one year versus another, or other items like that. But I will say overall, the idea and the president's idea was to make the code more simple and, as the president puts it, unrig the system and get rid of many of these special interest deductions that have clogged up the code. But that, of course, runs into the buzz, the political buzzsaw that we just talked about, and that's what makes the politics of selling tax reform much more difficult than the economics, which is pretty straightforward.
Yeah. You know, part of the problem is Trump's predecessor and Congress. We as citizens have been conditioned not to trust government because, surprise, they lie to us all the time. And one problem area I see in this is the promise from President Trump and Republicans is that they're out there saying that their plan will save the average household $4,000 or $1,000 and whatnot. Well, we heard a similar promise from Obama, who said Obamacare was going to save us all $2,500. I mean, why should the average person believe the government this time?
Well, that's right. Government hasn't had a great track record when it comes to honoring its promises on some of these proposals. Now, I do think that the math on tax reform is a little bit easier and less convoluted than, you know, we all remember that dreaded flow chart of the Obamacare system through the economy. And I really think it would be any economist would be going a little bit outside of their league to be able to suggest that what the average savings would be on that kind of a takeover of a huge percentage of our economy. At least with the tax code, we know, based at least on the static government scoring up here at the CBO and the Joint Tax Committee, of what this will do over a 10-year period, assuming that people don't change their behavior. We know that will not be the case. People will change their behavior based on taxes, because when you tax something, you get less of it. When you tax something less, you get more of it. So there's going to be a behavioral impact. That's not calculated in yet. We haven't seen the official dynamic score that the CBO will be coming out with. Hopefully in the next few days, we'll know a little bit more. But people are right to be skeptical, but I will say the scoring on tax policy should be much more accurate than the scoring on something so new and so overwhelming as a healthcare overhaul like Obamacare.
Yeah. I don't know. We're back to that trust factor, and I just don't trust the CBO either. All right. We will continue these thoughts with Jonathan Williams of ALEC. Stay with us. We're going to be talking about more jobs.
This is Carla Davenport, the producer of I Spy Radio. As you know, fighting abortion and standing up for the unborn is very important to us here on I Spy. Recently, Oregon became the most abortion-friendly state in the nation. While we can't stop all the new laws, did you know that we can stop the state from using taxpayer dollars to pay for free abortions? We urge you to visit StopTheFunding.com to sign the petition. That's StopTheFunding.com.
And welcome back. This is the I Spy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking to you today about tax reform. We're doing that with Jonathan Williams. He is with the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. You can go visit them at alec.org, ALEC.org. And so, Jonathan, one of the big promises is that this is going to be creating new jobs. And it's not surprising when you're talking about the amount of the cuts in the tax rate for corporations, dropping that all the way down to 20%. That's going to be a huge savings for these industries. And what I think gets often overshadowed on that is when you're allowing corporations, just like people, if you allow them to keep more of their money, they're going to find ways to spend that. They will hire more people. They will give people wages, wage increases that they maybe not have been able to before. They may be able to hire new people, research and development, buy equipment. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of economic activity that comes when you start allowing people to keep what they earn, or in this case, corporations.
Right. And the other piece of that is there's $2 to $3 trillion of profits sitting offshore right now that need to come back to the United States to create jobs here, to create that new investment here in the United States. And the only reason on earth for most of that it's sitting offshore is because our horribly antiquated corporate tax regime, which of course is going down dramatically on the rates. And also we're moving to a territory-based system instead of being really an outlier, having a worldwide system. And so while this will allow companies to bring back money here would also reduce that flow of companies keeping their profits offshore, which will be hugely beneficial. Now, of course, this is being routinely, as it always is here in Washington, panned as tax cuts for big business. And the thing that people forget about is that businesses don't pay taxes.
That's right.
People pay taxes. And that when businesses' tax rates go down, like you pointed out, there's all these benefits for individuals, including most of the research showing that corporate rates going down means wages going up and labor being the beneficiary of that. And even if it's not labor, even if it's reducing prices on goods, that's great for people. Or whether it's returning the rates on shareholders and what it means for people's 401ks and these horribly underfunded state pension systems, then they're the beneficiaries for that. So it's a win-win. And as we talked about before, we might not even see a revenue loss because of the Laffer curve effect and the dynamic effect of bringing that money back home and keeping it here.
Well, in terms of jobs, you know, it's kind of interesting when they talk about, you know, you say this is a tax cut for the wealthy, you know, for big business and so on. Has there ever been a case when the federal government lowers taxes that it does not create more jobs?
Well, right. No. And, you know, that has not been the case. And, you know, the other piece of this is regardless of where you cut also, I mean, not all tax cuts are created equally. We know that tax cuts on business, tax cuts on individuals, on income, on capital are the most beneficial for the economy. But let's say even we cut taxes in another way that's not as beneficial. Just getting that money out of Washington, D.C., back to the hardworking taxpayers and job creators across America, that has a net benefit to the economy just by getting that out of Washington and not by building it into the government spending baseline. So regardless of how you cut taxes, it's a net positive. And then when you cut taxes like cutting corporate income taxes and individual income taxes and the death tax, that is a massive net benefit.
Well, the one thing that I would have liked to have seen was lower tax rates on the wealthy. And there's this misguided notion that a tax cut for the wealthy just means they're going to keep more and more of their money. And it's almost like they envision Scrooge McDuck in the big vault and he's sitting on a pile of cash. That's not how reality is. And because when you give a wealthy person a tax cut, they're going to take that money that they're now allowed to keep and they're going to invest that. It doesn't sit in the bank somewhere because, number one, the interest rates are so low, they're either going to go out there and invest that in their own business or invest it in other businesses because they get a bigger rate of return that way.
Well, right. You make the case perfectly there. And Kevin Brady and the tax writers right now in Congress are caught in a difficult spot in that the left is criticizing them for being a giveaway for the rich and corporations. And then there are some criticisms on the right and legitimate in a lot of cases on why this isn't cutting taxes enough, especially on the higher income levels. So they're caught in a tough place politically because they're getting, you know, attacked from both sides. But when you look at the totality of the plan with so many of the pro-growth aspects, you look at what they probably should do on the individual side, like we talked about, and getting rates down across the board, including high income earners. But then you get down into so many of the areas, well, this should be a huge net benefit for people in middle income and lower income brackets as well. I mean, just a couple of things that kind of don't get talked about much is one is a really increasing, and this is great for school choice advocates. I know you all have followed that issue closely, and that is the expansion of the very popular 529 savings plans and expanding that to K-12 expenses for homeschoolers, for private schools. I mean, this is a massive win for school choice advocates, and some people have said, well, Betsy DeVos, the conspiracy theorists out there are saying, well, Betsy DeVos wrote this tax bill because this is what she ultimately wanted, but
there are
a lot of things, a lot of good benefits in this package that are not receiving nearly enough attention that will benefit everyone across the board.
Let's go and take a break early because I'd like to talk to you about corporate cronyism and how this is going to impact that. Stay with us. More with Jonathan Williams of ALEC. And welcome back on our final segment now with Jonathan Williams of ALEC. That's the American Legislative Exchange Council. They can be found at alec.org. If you'd like to go find out more about them. And Jonathan, going out of that last segment there, we were talking about cronyism and that this tax reform is actually going to be impacting that. This is the giveaways that a state will use to lure companies there. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about how this plan will impact that?
Well, right, and that, there's the benefits at the federal level, certainly by broadening out the tax base and getting rid of special favors in the tax code federally. But one of the unseen elements, or at least underreported elements, of this federal tax reform package is that it would start to make these handouts from states towards companies to lure them. We've seen it all. You know, we're going to see this competition over Amazon Headquarters 2 that's going out shopping around the various states. They're going to all be putting together generous packages, I'm sure. We saw it in Nevada with the Tesla deal. We saw it in Wisconsin with deals recently and other states. Every state does it. But states competing based on luring companies to cash subsidies, companies are going to need to start reporting some of that on their corporate tax returns, which is, you know, going to be a good move and hopefully incentivizing more corporate rate reductions at the state and local level and less of this competition through giveaway approach. Obviously, we don't want to see corporate taxes go up because we've talked about the benefits of lower business taxes. We just think that this will help the people that are doing the right thing by trying to reduce taxes across the board for all companies instead of picking winners and losers and choosing one over another or one industry over another.
Yes, absolutely. So one of the big things, of course, is the repeal of the so-called death tax. And this is big for not just the mega wealthy, but people that own family farms. Currently, a lot of families lose their farm when the parents die because they can't afford to pay the estate taxes. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about the impact of that?
Well, you know, you hear these horror stories about how families are forced to sell their long-held family businesses and farms and ranches because of the tax bill, because they need to come up with that money to pay the bill, and they're not liquid enough to pay it, so it forces a liquidity measure of selling off the business. And unfortunately, what that's meant is many, many businesses across this country and farms and ranches have been broken up for no other reason, yet Uncle Sam asked for that money to be taxed a second or third time at the time of death, and it's just a horrible, unfair, anti-American tax. So you look at the polling,
and unethical,
and it's one of the most hated.
Yeah, I think it's unethical as well.
Well, absolutely. There's no reason in the world why we need to have this tax. It doesn't raise any revenue looking at it from a federal level or a state level. It was, for goodness sakes, part of the Communist Manifesto for how to help redistribute income. Yeah. I mean, this is something that has needed to go for a very long time, and let's hope that Republican leaders stick together on this one, because there's no benefit from having this tax, and there is a whole lot that we're losing, just not from a moral perspective and an economic perspective. You know, people across the board hate this tax, even if they'll never pay it in their lives, because they know it is not a tax that should be part of the code.
Yeah. You know, in terms of moving forward, I really wish the Republicans had more spine, because there's several things that I think that are prime opportunities that they're really missing out on. The big one being that this is not they're not even talking about this being retroactive. And I think that's a huge mistake, because you think of the impact, next year is an election year. And a lot of those House of Representatives are up for a re-election. Come April 15th, suddenly people are paying a whole lot less taxes. There's your biggest political ad right there.
Well, that's of course, I've always talked about the idea that maybe you put Election Day next to Tax Day, and
yes.
I think that changes the outcome of a whole lot of different ideas and discussions when it comes to political campaigns. If they get it done early enough, and it's done for tax year 2018, while it would be much better to do it retroactively, people would see the benefit right away in terms of a big tax refund as they file starting in January. There still may be an element of victory here in terms of seeing taxpayers realizing those gains up front, in that if tax rates come down, there may be an adjustment, of course, in the brackets and withholding from employers. And so people will see immediately, hopefully in their first paychecks of January, the dividend from them getting it right in Washington. So it won't be as big as if we saw it retroactive to the beginning of tax year 2017. As long as things get wrapped up and are ready to go for January 1 of 2018, people will start seeing that benefit, hopefully in paychecks, right away at the beginning of the new year.
That would be nice. We only got about a minute here with you. One of the other things, getting back to the death tax, why did they choose to phase that in rather than make that immediate?
that's something if I were, playing Ways and Means God for the day, I would change that and I would go to immediate. There's really no huge revenue reason, I think, why they phased it in over 6 years. That would be a question that we need to ask the tax writers of why they chose that path. I just don't think there's an economic or revenue reason to do it. Perhaps it was, once again, politics invading this this process, because that is a tax that should have gone away a long time ago.
Well, overall, if you had to grade this, what would you grade this?
Boy, if I could split my grade up, I think I would probably give it an A or A minus on the corporate side of things. And of course, that has the benefits for all taxpayers, as we talked about, not just for businesses. But on the individual side, I do think there's some improvements that I think we'll hopefully see made in the House and Senate process as it moves forward. I think a full repeal of SALT would help finance more rate reductions on the individual side, so not any one group of taxpayers would see any phantom rate or hidden rate or secret rate that we've seen talked about on Drudge Report or others. And every single family would see a net tax cut. I think that's what we need to head towards.
Yeah, I'm more of a B, maybe B plus, just because I think this needed to be bold. I don't think it's bold enough, but maybe it'll get there. Jonathan Williams, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Well, thanks so much for having me back, my friend.
All right, you take care. You know, if you're like me, you're astounded by advances in science. Scientists recently discovered a means to combine jellyfish DNA with a human embryo. The resulting life form was a completely spineless human being. Scientists are naming it a congressional Republican. Be bold, Republicans. Be bold. Although sometimes I get the sense congressional Republicans are just stalling until the real Democrats can take over. Follow me on Twitter at iSpyRadio. Visit our website, iSpyRadio.com. Check out our advertisers while you're there. And give all of that a share, won't you? Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.